right, hello everyone, and welcome to the ULP podcast. As usual, the ULP stands for Unsolicited Lurid Pauses. On this week, it's me, Scott Reed, along with
Ryan Johnson,
Jeff Rupert,
Chris Stark.
All right, on this episode, we're going to be talking about Plaid Hat's Dead of Winter. We're going to have a discussion about game journals, and then we're going to talk about the downfall of Pompeii. But first, let's go ahead and talk about the weekend gaming. Chris, I think you had some stuff to tell us about some thrift store finds you found.
Yes, so I went out thrifting, stopped by one of the local stores, hadn't gone in a while. I've been meaning to get out more, and picked up an old copy of Liar's Dice, the Milton Bradley version, which was complete, which is good. I already have a couple more of those, and I've combined into one big set that can handle 12 players, but it's always good to have another. Also picked up Downfall, which looked like a weird two-player game where each of you is staring at opposite sides of a board, and there's gears, and you turn them, and you're trying to get your pieces down in the proper order on your side before the other. Unfortunately, it wasn't complete, so I'm going to keep an eye out for other ones. I think I've seen it around before. And I think the main score is Tubaruba, which is a game. It's made of those plastic tubes that are used to hold wires together for your computers, basically. Like, that's kind of what it reminds me of. One side has just an opening and the other side has a catcher, and you wrap it around your body or you and someone else, and then you drop a marble in it. And the whole object of the game is to get the marble all the way to the other end by moving around and contorting things like that. So those were what I found at the thrift store, and then I also got a game called Team Play in the mail, which is a Schmidt Spiel game. I think it's only available in overseas right now. It does have English rules in it, but it looks like a cool partnership game where you're just trying to help each other out, you and your partner, make these sets that are in front of you. You have victory point cards, and you're trying to make the right combination. That's pretty much it for me this week.
I got you. Jeff, you said you were getting some games together for a game day this weekend?
Yeah, Tabletop Day is this Saturday, and I know a few people in my building enjoy playing games. My neighbor is one of them. He's really into games, but he's not here a lot, so I don't get to hang out and play with him. But yeah, I just put a message out on our private Facebook group, see if anybody would be interested, and got positive response. And we have a event space downstairs that can be rented out for like weddings and stuff like that. And the owner of the building said I could use it for that. So I'm going to set that up and see who shows up on Saturday.
Cool. Ryan, how about you? What do you have for this week in gaming?
Well, this week I will be concentrating on getting Chris and Geekway their Battling Tops poster. So if anybody's familiar with Geekway or Board Game Geek Con also has a Battling Tops tournament. But if you're familiar with those or you're in the areas and you want to see a spectacle of just rowdy geeks, stop in and watch them play Battling Tops. It's pretty funny. So I'll be doing an old style luchador poster that will actually feature last year's first and second place winners, as well as a number of our friends that we know or people that tend to stand out in the crowd during the game. And I get to draw them in underwear and luchador masks and give them funny names.
Excellent. Sounds good. All right. So for our first segment, we're going to talk about Dead of Winter. It's a 2014 game from Plaid Hat Games. It's a zombie game, which a lot of games with zombies came out in the last 5 or so years. But it uses a unique mechanism where there are situations where sometimes decisions get to be made. Ryan, would you want to tell us a little bit about Dead of Winter?
Yeah, sure. So it's an older game, and we thought we'd bring it up during the news segment because it has an upcoming expansion called The Long Night that's pretty anticipated right now. Like Scott said, it's the best thing about this, other than it being a zombie game for the people that love zombie games, is it uses this crossroads mechanic where before each and every player's turn, the player to the left, I believe, or maybe it's right, is going to draw a card, and they're going to read the top part of it, and the top part will detail a situation that may or may not be happening at the moment. If it is happening, they're going to stop play and read the situation, or they'll wait until some of the cards have cues. For instance, if a player goes to the gas station this turn, enact this card. So they'll read it, they'll interrupt play and they'll read it at that point. And it's really, it's a great mechanic because a lot of these zombie games tend to be kind of built the same way, right? There's really only a couple ways that you can put a board out in front of people and have characters fighting zombies. The great thing about this is without it being an event deck that happens every single turn and really kind of messes with the rules of the game, there are situational things that tend to make sense in the storyline, and they'll either dynamically change someone's objective, or they'll they'll really kind of throw a wrench in the works. As a game goes, it's a pretty interesting game. It's got a nice trader mechanic in it where one player potentially can be not quite invested in the group survival. And there are other mechanics in the game where those where the players who aren't the saboteur or the odd player out, if they can start to detect that one of the players is not going to help them meet their goals and is actually working against them, you can vote to expel that player. And in some other zombie games, that kind of ends marks an end for that player. And they get to do a little bit, but not much. In Dead of Winter, it's nice because that player can't be killed. They're just, you know, they're kicked out of the, I think it's like a community center in the first game. But that player's kicked out and they get to kind of really work against the other players. And it makes it way more difficult, you know, if you have a scorned player out there. But the new game, I think, comes with like new zombie art. There's new locations, new cards for those locations. And it's one of those games where it can only get better by being changed a little bit while keeping the main mechanics the same. So I'm really looking forward to it. We played it once at BoardGameGeek.com. I immediately went home and ordered it. It's just one of those games that the story in it kind of, it's easy to tell that story and the characters are kind of fun. And there's like, what was the one character? I think, Scott, I think you played him, the drunk Santa.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just really interesting characters that are flawed. You know, there's no powerhouses out there. But what did the drunk Santa do? Like, you could kill him to...
If you killed him, you could raise the group's morale by one, which was since you have to deal with a morale thing. And usually when somebody dies, morale goes down. But he was the opposite, that you could choose to sacrifice him, I believe, and it pushed the morale up by one, because he was a character that was there, but he was regarded as more of an annoyance. So getting rid of him made everybody a little happier.
You know, a highlight to the Crossroads style of the game, was it your bad Santa character that, because you get to play two or more characters in the course of the game. And Scott, was it you that had the drunk or the bad Santa with the dog? And there was kind of a romance card played, and like the drunk Santa was way too into the dog, and the dog didn't really want anything to do with it.
It was something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of a funny little bit, and you know that stands out in the game. So, you know, I really enjoy, you know, kudos to Plaid Hat for building a game that can offer you that kind of memory in a game. I mean, what do you guys think about Dead of Winter?
I remember enjoying it. I bought it. I haven't got a chance to play it since then. That's all I got. I'm sorry.
I like Dead of Winter. I've introduced it to a number of players. We played a few of the different scenarios. I've had the opportunity to win as the traitor once, and that feels really... It doesn't happen that often, but it's pretty fun when it does. I also like the variety of characters and the story it tells. I think it's a good, solid game overall. I like it. I'm not sure what the expansion will bring. The element I think I like the most is those Crossroads cards, because there's a ton of them and you're never going to get through all of them. You know, they just keep going and going. And I really like that storytelling aspect that it can add to it overall. And it's, you know, it has solid mechanics. It ratchets up the tension. You know, I think if I had a complaint about it, it sometimes feels like, you know, that you're not going to win, or you know that it's pretty much impossible, a little too far away from the ending, you know, like maybe a couple of turns ahead of time. It's got that kind of predetermined path, and I'm not sure there's a whole lot that you can do that will necessarily change that between then and the end. But overall, I really like it. Like I said, I've played it a lot, and I'll keep introducing it to people, especially people who like that genre, the zombie genre.
Now, Chris, you know the guys at Plaid Hat, right? Are they going to do other styles of games with Crossroads?
When I've talked to them about it, they said they are, but I think that their main focus right now is Dead of Winter. I think the main issue is they just haven't found another theme that really sticks out, that's something that really works. Because I've heard them talk about the things like the abandoned space station, aliens, and those kinds of themes. And I think those would be cool and work out, but why not capitalize on one that's really made an impact? Because I think it's in the top 100 on BoardGameGeek, and it continues to sell. They have that expansion coming out. I'm not sure they're in a hurry to put out more of them until the fever dies down with this one.
Yeah, I think at the time Dead of Winter came out, there was talk that Crossroads was going to be a new genre or a new thing that Plaid Hat was going to do, but just what little information I could pull up real quick says that at the moment the only things that are really in the Crossroads series are all Dead of Winter items, so they haven't yet even announced that they've got another game that they're going to do under the system. But I really, I'm with you guys. I really like the system there. I think that it adds an extra dynamic into the game where there can be an event that's going to happen on each player's turn, but because of the size and the breadth of that deck, there's no guarantee something's going to happen each turn, and then when something does happen or something when something might happen, usually the players have a decision to make, and there's not necessarily a certainty about what's going to happen if you choose A over B.
I do think it's pretty cool that they're doing a standalone expansion, so you don't need the base game to play. I think more companies should do that.
Yeah, because it's the same size box and format of box, right?
It looks like it.
Yeah, you know, another thing about Crossroads is, you know, I always appreciate those games that let other players who aren't, you know, on the current turn a little bit of action. So you're not waiting 20 minutes for your turn to come back around in a full game of six or something like that. So any games that can do that and not make it kind of a hurdle for playing is, that's always a good thing.
And I think for a time it had some difficulties with availability, but I think at present it's fairly widely available. I don't think that you can get Dead of Winter on Target's website, but I am pretty certain they've got good availability on Amazon and other hobby websites.
I like what Plaid Hat is doing overall. They're going for theme first, it seems, over mechanics, but they're also integrating the mechanics in that, you know, because they put out Mice and Mystics as well, which is very thematic. And then Spectre Ops was another one of theirs, which is in that line of Scotland Yard or Letters from Whitechapel. The same kind of thing where it's many against one. I like the products they're putting out. I like the direction that they're going. And they seem to have at least a good handle on art. What do you think of the art used in Dead of Winter, Ryan?
You know, I really like it, actually. I wouldn't even say it's really stylized, but, you know, they've really taken a lot of, you know, they put attention to the detail of the different characters. So they're all massively different. And, you know, it doesn't feel like they recycled any of the art at all. In fact, a lot of the cards you get out of the locations tend to be a little bit different. But yeah, I mean if you guys had to pick, like, so if Plaid Hat came to us and said, hey, what other than, I mean, because like when you said Space Station, you know, I sat there and I thought about it, and that's really just a generic retheme of that, right? It's the same whether it's a zombie or an alien, it's the same thing, right? What theme of game would you like to see a Crossroads in? For me, there's a lack of great spy games out there, in my opinion. Even cooperative games where you're trying to Mission Impossible kind of a deal. I think a Crossroads type system in a spy game could really impact, because, you know, spy missions tend to be all about, you know, you've got this objective and stuff comes up and you've got to overcome that small thing as well as the greater goal. So, you know, that's what I'd like to see it in.
I could see one with, you know, like one of our favorite games, Outdoor Survival. Someone caught in the wilderness, come across different things, you know. A bear, whatever, you know, and even crazy stuff. You can go aliens or what have you, that kind of stuff. You can make it kind of wild and zany. So I think that one would be cool. Or even maybe like a Frontier Town kind of thing, Wild West theme, the different types of obstacles, different things going on and conflicts between the players.
The Oregon Trail. Yeah. Oh, crap. Somebody just died of dysentery.
Yeah. Every other card is dysentery.
Jeff, what about you?
All I can think of is steampunk and pirates. Because zombies is played out and those two are both played out. So I don't know.
You know, actually a pirate theme is actually kind of interesting because, you know, those Crossroads, you know, I don't know if there are. I can't think of any pirate games that have a trader mechanic in them anyway. And what better group to have a trader in, right? Like Chris said, you know, those Crossroads cards usually kind of deepen the, you know, the suspense and the tension, that because the last thing you need when someone's trying to actively work against you is the game to kind of throw your objective on its ear and compound the problems. So Scott, what about you?
The theme I was thinking about was maybe a semi co-op game about a bank heist, because you've got a whole lot of situations where things can go wrong. You know, something where you are not necessarily a bank heist, but just some sort of heist type situation. You could have situations where a lot of things could go wrong. The trader mechanism would be, I mean, it would be, I think it would fit in easier in that one, just because somebody's,
oh, there's an undercover cop. Yeah.
Right. There's an undercover cop or something along those things, along those lines.
Point Break, the Crossroads game.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I was also thinking that it's only semi-cooperative because everyone needs to, the heist has to go off for anybody to get paid from it. but you're also working for yourself a little bit because you need to, you know, it's partly what your haul is going to be, what you come out with.
Yeah, now I'm thinking of a game where you have, it's a fancy party, you know, like in the 1800s, this giant cotillion or ball, you know, the ladies and gentlemen walking around gossiping, things happen, you know, someone gets in a drunken fight. Read this card if you find someone fornicating in the master bedroom. Yeah, just stuff like that. I think it'd be fun casting aspersions on each other and trying to come out looking the best out of a social situation.
Yeah, because that's what I want to see, right? I think it's low-hanging fruit to change it to a space station with aliens. I guess I have high expectations for Plaid Hat because they have been so good with their themes. I hope they really, you know, apply it to a game that's not just... Because, you know, when I think of something like that, I think of the, Castle Panic becomes Zombie Panic or whatever. It's the same game, right? I mean, might be a couple little things that are different, and I'm sure it's fun to play as well. But, you know, that Crossroads, it doesn't have to be the same game, different theme, new cards. It can be... I mean, I think we came up with five different just really great ideas just now. We're so good.
I was thinking like a political theme too, like all the crap that comes, like since we're in the dealing with all the election crap, you know, like people trying to get elected and just like crazy news stories comes out or gossip or just random.
Read like this card if the intern and the president are in the same room.
Way to date yourself, Ryan.
Excellent. Well, I think we had a good discussion here about Dead of Winter. Moving on, we're going to talk about game journals. I think all of us keep a game journal in one form or another. I've been keeping a journal for about 10 years or so, and it originally started as just a small log of the games I was playing, just to write down who, you know, what I had played and who I'd played it against. And since then, I've grown and built up into several volumes, but it more or less is completely my record of everything I've played for the past 10 years. The only thing that's common to every single entry is that I'm in each one of them because it's my personal gaming log. But it includes games, like it possibly includes the first games I played with Ryan. I'm certain it includes the first games I played with Chris and with Jeff. It's games I've played at conventions. It's games I played in at trade shows. Sometimes it's prototypes that only got played once or twice and ended up in that book that never went anywhere. And sometimes it's the first exposure that I had to a game that I've, you know, ended up going on to play 100 times. It's one of those ones that while I've been keeping a game journal, people have noticed that I keep a journal and that, you know, sometimes I can go back and I can look up and see what we played sometime and what the result was. Ryan, you've kept a game journal as well for a while, and yours is actually really fantastic with the level of illustration and stuff you've done in it. Talk a little bit about what you've done in your journal.
Yeah, so I played for probably several years watching you kind of record the games, and you know, like you said, we would definitely, you know, question would come up on, you know, how long it's been since we played something, because you know, in today's hobby game scene, at times we've come across this issue where we're not getting in the games we really like or the games that we've liked over the years. At different points in our, you know, hobby lives, we've kind of fallen prey to game of the week or, you know, the new stuff constantly and never come back to those old games that we really enjoy. And so I watched you, you know, as you kind of were cataloging basically the games that you played and the people you'd played them with, I started doing the same thing. But as an artist, I wasn't recording as much information as you were. I think you record who's played the game before, who's what date it is, and I think you get, what, two entries per page?
Generally two per page, and title, date, players, and then special notation if it's the first time a player has played that particular game.
Right, and so mine, you know, I kind of started the same thing and immediately started wigging out because as an artist, I don't like a bunch of empty space. So I started just kind of doodling in them, and at the point where funny things would happen or particular, you know, in joke had happened or something, you know, a little bit vulgar, you know, I would draw a little doodle and, you know, we would all laugh about it. And that kind of struck a chord with me. So I started, you know, a challenge like most artists, you know, there's a lot of artists out there that will try to keep a sketch journal. And I've been terrible at that in my career as an artist. So I challenged myself to try to keep each, you know, start at the point where I started journaling. And then actually draw a, you know, something from either the game or the experience that we had at that time. And it's making me a better artist on top of the fact that that's really a great recall engine for me. I can look back and just based on what I was thinking about at the time and or the drawing that ended up getting drawn, I can almost with perfect recall remember the game I played. So I think once we kind of get developed here on the podcast, I'll probably start throwing up the less racy pages I've got in the journal. And anymore, I'm trying to make them completely PG friendly in the books I've got, because at some point, I think my kids will probably end up looking at these journals. I know I did. I have an uncle that kept an art journal, and so that's a really special thing for me to be able to look at what he was doing that day through his pictures. So I love doing it, and I wish I had more time to do more of it. I think I've got one full one and about halfway done with another one. So, and then I've got two unfinished ones waiting. So
I also like the way that with you keeping pictures of things, sometimes in games where drawing is involved, you end up capturing something back out of that. Like the one that sticks in my mind is when we were playing Te Deum and there was a confusion about what the picture was supposed to be drawn. So one player drew bacon because that's what they thought they were supposed [S2] Right. [S1] To draw. The other player thought they were supposed to draw a snake. So the picture together became snaken, and then you...
And it lined up.
And you've got a fine rendering of... a cobra in your book that has a frying pan with bacon in it in the middle of its body, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoy that. And, there's all kinds of other, some of the One Night Werewolf games we played, I've got some great illustrations on that. I think we talked about it, actually, the outdoor survival where Jeff just, moved three spaces and sat down and apparently found some ditchweed or something and just stayed there the whole game. I mean, that ended up being,
I think we decided it was mushrooms.
Mushrooms? Was it?
I think that's what
you
said.
But that, and the fun thing about that was for me is that was the first time I actually kind of drew a character of Jeff. And I don't know if I nailed it, but through the next three pictures of Jeff that I got, I've got now this little caricature of Jeff. And I think I've gotten, I think I've got all three of you now in the game and or in the books. So, it's a lot of fun. And I, as an artist, you also want people to see what you've drawn. And it's a fun way for me to show. People usually, people that aren't gamers kind of look at it like, what are these numbers? I'm like, well, those are our scores. That's really the important thing about this page. Chris, what about you?
I just really started doing it last year. I did it all last year, filled up an entire journal with my gaming last year. This year, I'm way behind, I think. I don't think I've gotten nearly as much gaming in as I did last year at this time. But it's fun. I can't draw. I think I keep sloppier records than the rest of you do, too. I made sure I wrote them all down, but I really just am concerned about the name of the game, the date, the scores, and then who played. I don't keep track of first plays or any of that stuff. Ryan, you've drawn in my journal at least once that I know of for we played that role-playing game about the Civil War. Yeah, Carolina Deathcrawl. That's it. You drew one of the scenes from that game. I'm trying to remember what exactly was
that. Oh, yeah, because, I do remember something about, there was
oh, nice. We, there was hanging.
Did the game hang somebody or did we hang somebody?
I'm pretty sure we ended up hanging somebody in that game.
Jeff?
I don't know, but that game, though, Carolina Deathcrawl, is about being terrible people, so.
Right.
And we were certainly.
It wasn't us, it was that game.
Yeah.
We would never hang somebody.
That's right. But the game is all about being terrible, and we were terrible in that game. I enjoy it from a just from the standpoint that I can flip through it and have those memories. It sticks with me more than just using something digital or logging it on a website or something. And the way that I typically do it is I do write everything down in my phone. I keep kind of a notepad going. I use Evernote to write everything down, and then I transfer it over to a real journal. Just, writing it down, getting a feel for it, and it's good. I'm able to go back in time. I've used it to, when talking to my daughter or settle an argument with my wife, who won a certain game, that kind of things. I'm glad I picked up the habit. I do have a journal this year that I need to do some catching up on, and I like it. I don't know. Maybe I need more structure. Maybe I need something else other than just a blank page to capture some more information that would be interesting to me. I'm an analyst in my job, but I don't really feel like putting everything into a spreadsheet, and analyzing this part. I think there's something valuable about writing things down. And I know, Scott, you have ideas about, what would make up a perfect game journal, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk to Jeff about his game journal.
Yes. I was like, I'm going to be left out of this conversation.
I've drawn Jeff's journal a couple times.
I think all of you have drawn in my journal. My favorite's the little like flipbook guy in the corner. I think Chris did. Little animation thing. I started using one after watching you guys. I learned it by watching you. I mainly keep track of like the date, the name of the game, who played, and the scores. And then I usually jot down like a little note of like what I thought, just something real quick, like, oh, I love this game, or meh, or like, you know, don't buy, or Stocks and Bonds is a horrible game, stuff like that. One thing, it's a little quirk with me, when I'm writing down who played, I always start whoever's left of me and then go clockwise around the table, and I'm always last on the list. I don't know why I do that. It's just something I started doing a long time ago, or when I first started using one, but I dig it. I don't do it enough to fill up a book a year. And I also have like four or five books that are like way out of order. So I'll just grab one and go to whatever event I'm going to. And I'm like, oh, these are games from like 2014. And now it's 2016.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, Jeff, because we were all journaling a while. And then watching you kind of record your thoughts on the game is something I always kind of wanted to do, but I would never be able to do it consistently. But just seeing you write something like, Jeff should never buy this game, kind of a thing. That's, I mean, it's really kind of a good practice for somebody who knows that they're going to get into the hobby. And I'm into the hobby pretty heavily. And there's still games that I just can't keep track of everything. So, you know, in a way, I wish I had a journal that just kind of let me record it. Hey, this is an interesting thing to me. Look this up later, or, you know, try to get this in. Because even at Bubba Geek, how many games, probably 10 games that we wanted to play, just didn't get in.
Right.
So, you know, in a way, that's also a nice part of that journaling that I want to be able to start taking advantage of.
It's funny. It's interesting you'd say that, Ryan. When I, the first book I did back in January of 2005, for like the first dozen or so pages, I don't even know if I recorded scores, because my original thought on keeping a journal was I was actually going to write a tiny session report about what game we played and what we did. And that lasted for about, like I said, about a dozen entries, because there's a certain point where I wasn't going to continue to try to write a session report each time. But there is kind of like you're taking your pictures as well, capturing a little bit extra about the game, not just an abstract of who won or how it turned out, but capturing a little bit of a narrative about like what I thought about it or what happened to sort of jog the memory on that one. Seemed like something very appealing, and I kind of wish I'd. A part of me wishes I'd stuck with that, but I also know it would have been a very, very deep time sink. On the subject, Chris, of analyzing, which I'm talking about that right now, on the subject of analyzing, having journaled for quite a while, I'm working on sort of a journal project to maybe someday have a commercial product that helps set how people might analyze and record their gameplays, and just sort of taking some of the elements of the things that we commonly show in our journals and just codifying them onto a page, and then having a printed book that people can record stuff down. So maybe that's something that will pop up in the future. We'll see how that all shakes out.
So what kind of stuff would you add into it, Scott?
Like some of the things that I do, like recording who was a new player to the game, a basic system of recording a small rating, but also taking some ideas from a few other rating journal type of things. I wanted to make it where players could also individually rate aspects of the game, and so you could see sort of a visual analysis of what you think about the game and be able to compare that to other games of the same genre, or also be able to compare it against somebody else who has also rated those aspects of the game. You could see where you match up and where you don't match up.
Yeah, I think that's interesting too. And I know you and I have talked about it a little bit, and you know how we would, you know, build these things. It's interesting to me to be able to add other aspects to these journals as well, whether it's a place at the back where, you know, you can track some of the people you've met at different game cons. And because there are some people that you've met, you don't really know that you'd put them in your phone as a contact, but being able to record them as somebody you played with and you had a good time playing with, you know, that's worthwhile. And then, you know, also, you know, I would love to have a game journal that had the segments already kind of set aside for each of my drawings. So, you know, whether or not we get to that point of specialization, we'll see. I mean, how prevalent do you guys think outside of our group, how prevalent do you think journaling is in board gaming? Are we just like super nerds that we're journaling, or?
I've looked around at conventions we've gone to, and I think that it pops up an awful lot. That it seems like everybody has a ubiquitous little black notebook that they're writing their stuff down in. And it's interesting that there have been some attempts at been a few shots at commercial products, but they've kind of almost just been repeating some of the things that you see in just a blank notebook. So I think there's a lot of people that are doing it. I'm just not certain what, you know, just what they're capturing, and there's no real like consistency. I think that's among journalers. So it'd be interesting to see if everybody had a generalized system they went with, how that would impact what all gets recorded. All right. So after that interesting discussion about game journaling, let's talk about our old game for this episode. Jeff, you were going to talk to us about Downfall of Pompeii.
Yes, I love that game. 2 to 4 players, approximately 45 minutes. That guy, Klaus Jürgen Rehde, with art by Oliver Friedenreich and Guido Hoffman. Pretty fun game. I think I played it for the first time 2 years ago. Basically, the game takes place in the city of Pompeii, right before the volcano explodes. It's played in two parts. The first part is everybody is playing cards from their hand that they have. Based on the card they play, they can place one of their meeples in the building that matches it color-wise and number-wise, sorry. And then at a certain point in the draw deck, there's an 8079 card, which is, I don't know what they actually call it. It says 8079 on the card, but I don't know if it's like Vesuvius is erupting or something like that. When the first one's drawn, then you can populate the city with your relatives and friends. And you do that by playing a card from your hand. And when you place your meeple into the building, you get to place additional meeples in other buildings based on the number that are in the original building. So if you're placing a meeple in a building that has 3 already in it, you get to place 3 additional meeples in other spots on the board. Once the second 8079 card is drawn, that's when Vesuvius is erupting and everybody gets rid of all their cards and then takes turns drawing tiles from a bag and placing them on the board based on symbols on the tiles. And that symbolizes the spread of the lava throughout the city. When you place a tile on the board, if you place it on a space that has meeples there, you get to pick them up and toss them into the volcano, which I think is a pretty cool little kitschy thing. But everybody I've played it with so far loves that aspect of it. Like, wait, you actually get to sacrifice people to the volcano or kill people? So that's pretty cool. And then as that's happening, when you place your tile, you get to move 2 of your pieces towards the exits of the city, and any of your pieces that you get out of the city, you count as victory points.
And it also, isn't it that when you're moving them to escape the city, aren't your movement points also based on the number of pieces that were in the space that you left from?
Correct. And that is something I have been playing the entire time that I've had this game. I want to blame it on Chris for teaching me wrong, but he's shaking his head no, and all of you can't see that because this is audio only. But I always thought, I misunderstood it, that you could move 1 piece 2 spaces or 2 pieces 1 space each. But I found out this weekend at CatanCon, when I was actually trying to teach it to some other people, that it is based on how many pieces are in the space that you're moving from. So if there's 4 people in there, you get to move it 4 spaces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then you get to move a second piece the same way. If you're moving a piece that's alone, it just gets to move 1 space, and then you can move it again an additional single space if it's also still alone at that after that first move.
Yeah, that's one of the things I remembered about the game, is that with that plus a few of the other aspects, they're an unusual collection of mechanisms that are put together, but that mechanism is interesting in that you do better in trying to flee from the board as long as you stay together in groups. When you start to get separated and isolated, you are completely boned because you have to make baby steps towards the edge of the board, which I have to imagine in your games with the incorrect rules, there weren't that many survivors of Vesuvius. Only the people who were very close to the exits actually made it out.
Right.
Yeah, I enjoy that part of the game too, because it becomes a timing game, right? So you're trying to take advantage of people kind of clustered together without giving them that same advantage as they leave the space, you know, leave you behind. So,
Chris, what do you think about the Downfall of Pompeii?
I like it. It's a good light elimination game. It reminds me a lot of Survive, you know, where you're trying to mess with other players, take their guys out while get your guys off the board. You know, I think it's got, you know, a decent theme, if a morbid theme, but, and it's the cool part to me is, like Jeff said, sacrificing other players to the volcano, and it's got a cool little 3D volcano that you throw them into, and you can count them up at the end and complain that you were the one that was targeted the most or whatever. So I really like it. I don't know where Jeff got the wrong rules from, but I'm going to blame that on Jeff.
I call it the Darden variant.
Jeff, you touched on it briefly as well. The lava flow mechanism is also a very interesting one in that, because there are, I think, six different sources of lava in the game, that with the drawing of from the bag, you can have pieces that more or less get lucky because the lava never flowed in that direction and never sealed you away from the edge of the board, but that all the lava that's on the board is going to flow at different rates because it's going to come down to only how they're drawn out of the bag.
That is correct. There's actually only one source of lava, and that's the volcano, because where else is lava going to come from?
Well, that's the thing, too. I think I played it three times, and every time I played it, at some point, usually after the volcano has erupted, I sit there and I contemplate, like, what did this game, like so many other games, they start out as one kind of theme and or concept, and then they get kind of built into what they become in the retail space. I just wondered, you know, was this game originally about people fleeing burning lava, or, you know, was it something else? Like, what, I can't imagine how this got turned into what ends up being a great game, but just with that super dark theme of you're populating Pompeii only to run from lava and hope that the other players have more people die to the lava than you. I don't know. I would love to hear at some point, if any of us ever find out what that game was originally slated to be, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, true. Unless, you know, maybe he went with a top-down design. He was just like, I'm going to make a game about Pompeii, and then you know, went backwards towards what it became. But I'm with you. If this was originally supposed to be something else, it'd be interesting to find out what that theme originally was. All right, well, I think we had a good discussion here about the downfall of Pompeii. Let's move on to our final segments. So our hypothetical for this show is, because a lot of games that are tied into movies and television shows are generally pretty terrible, and for, you know, the longest stretch where everything was just roll and move junk, one of the biggest IPs that has been out in the past couple of years has been the Harry Potter universe. But just like with everything else, all of the Harry Potter games have been pretty much terrible. So our hypothetical for this evening is, what game deserves to be licensed as a Harry Potter game? Ryan, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So we got several years ago, one of us picked up Nuns on the Run. Nuns on the Run is it's a Mayfair game. It's all players against one other player or two. I guess it could be two players. One or two players play the nuns. And the nuns are on their nightly rounds checking the rooms of the novices. The novices are trying to escape their room, and they each have a secret mission to get somewhere else in the nunnery and basically misbehave and get back without getting caught. It was maybe 2 minutes into the first time we played it, and I thought, man, this was really just a miss. Mayfair, if they'd had a license with whoever owns Harry Potter, either the films or the books, you know, this would have been a really charming game about, you know, Harry and his friends trying to get to all the different places they go in the stories and not get caught by Filch and his cat. It would have worked the exact same, and it would have been way more accessible to a lot of younger players, because, I mean, it's a game about nuns. So it's, you know, it would have been way more interesting as a Harry Potter game. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think it would have been pretty good as a Harry Potter game.
No, I agree. I think it'd be good, especially with a layout of Hogwarts and the way that it changed and secret passages and, you know, just all that kind of stuff. I think the theme would have really lended itself well to that particular game.
The mechanics in the game are really solid, and every game we've played, there are some really tense moments where a novice is hiding just out of sight of one of the nuns, and several times that, you know, if you're wily enough, you know, you play your movement cards right, or you can escape them, and it's, you know, it's a feasible, you know, mechanic in the game. And on the opposite side of that, the nuns, or Filch in our case, has a really good chance of, if he's smart and changes his routes occasionally, you know, could find Harry and his buddies. So it would have been interesting to see something like that. What about these other games? What do you guys think?
I was thinking something like Betrayal and House on the Hill could be a cool Harry Potter game where you're like exploring Hogwarts, you know, how like in the halls of Hogwarts, all the stairwells change and that kind of thing. So as you're drawing tiles, like the building is changing every game kind of thing. That or some sort of cooperative game like any of the Dungeons and Dragons adventure games where there's tile, basically anything where there's sort of tile drawing and the board isn't set every game. Thought that would be interesting take on it.
Yeah, I could see that. That would be an interesting take on the game, especially because a lot of the books center around your three primary characters having to explore various aspects of Hogwarts. That, you know, if they've got to go someplace to chase a troll or some business like that, that having the board change around them or having to sort of explore and find would be fairly fun.
I also thought, like, I couldn't think of an example of the game, but like the Triwizard Tournament from the books, where you have like three different rival schools competing in the tournament, but then kind of like a reverse version of Betrayal on House on the Hill kind of thing. So everybody's working towards their own goal, but then like something happens and at the end they all have to work together. That kind of take.
So Chris, what was your idea for a Harry Potter license?
I think Harry Potter would really lend itself well to a game like Scotland Yard or Letters from Whitechapel, where I believe in one of the books, Harry was on the run from various people. And so you could be playing the evil wizards, trying to find him and just trying to track him down and working together as a group. But you could add some twists to it, you know, some spells, some tricks, some, you know, things like that. Bring in those wizarding things, you know. And I think Ryan said this earlier, I took a broom here, then I, you know, used a chimney to escape to here, and then, you know, went to Diagon Alley and got something else. You know, just bring yourself into the world of Harry Potter and run through the various places in that way. I think there's a decent game there.
You could all be Dementors chasing after Harry.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott, what about you?
Actually, Ryan, I stole one of your old ideas you told me several years ago, and that is using Techno Witches to be a Harry Potter broom game. Just because, I mean, Techno Witches is already halfway there. It is almost as though it was supposed to be a Harry Potter game, and they had to change the license at the last minute. But it's a light enough game that it's very accessible, but it still requires a little bit of like problem solving and spatial reasoning, because you have to choose the paths that you're going to attach to your broom. But the way that the game runs, you put them all, everything goes together sort of backwards onto your planning board. So really emulating having experience with flying on your broom type of thing, which I think lends itself to the theme fairly well. And then just like sort of the broom things that are covered in the book, you have to navigate a course to make it around to complete your race, which I think is fairly interesting. But I think that one could have very easily been a Harry Potter type of game.
Yeah, you could almost do a Quidditch game like that, right? I mean,
a little bit. I feel like for what Quidditch is for the books, it, you know, because I was just thinking about that as well, is that could you do like Battle Ball as a Quidditch type of game? But for what's supposed to be going on, that you have scoring balls that are moving around as well as object balls that are trying to knock you off, and you have the outside, the snitch, as supposed to be a thing that you pick up. I feel like there's just too many elements going on to try to manage that well in a game that would be as light as it should be for what that game is supposed to be. I mean, you're not going to play ASL Quidditch. That's not the level of complexity that all the rules of that game would seem to call for. Excellent, excellent. Well, on the next episode of the ULP, we're going to talk about the Sheriff of Nottingham. Ryan is going to talk to us about game art, and Corey is going to choose an old game for us to talk about. I'm Scott Reed. I'm at LudographyScott on Twitter.
I'm Ryan Johnson. I'm at Old River Studios on Twitter.
I'm Chris Darden, at CB Darden.
I'm Jeff Rupert, at Ludography Jeff on Twitter.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. This was brought to you by Ludography.net. Ludography.net, in no danger of hitting that bandwidth cap. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Bye. Ba-da-bum-ba-dum-bum.